Today we are reading Vayikra chapter 22. This chapter comes at the end, more or less, of the series of mitzvahs which started in Parshas Kedoshim, which are framed around the concept of Kedusha, and the opposite of Kedusha, which is Chilul Hashem. So Kedusha is Kedoshim Tiyu Ki Ani Hashem, and Chilul is L'Chalul Hashem Kodshi. As we've seen in previous chapters, there are different levels of Kedusha, and each person has to act within his level. So the first parsha, most of Parshas Kedoshim, was about Yisrael. All the Jewish people have a certain Kedusha, Kedoshim Tiyu, and therefore must act in as is proper to their Kedusha. And the same way the Kehanim, which is more or less with the beginning of Parshas Emor, started about the Kehanim, have their own level of Kedusha, a specific Kedusha. And we discussed in beginning of Parshas Emor what this specific Kedusha consists of. It consists mostly of their job. The Kehanim's job is to be makriv something called Lechem Elihav, which are the Kodeshim, right? The holy bread, the Karbonas, which are considered the bread of Hashem. Their Kedusha is to be makriv then, and therefore they have to act as is proper to their station and a different level of Kedusha in their actions. And therefore, there's also a chilul. If they don't act as is proper to their Kedusha, they're considered to be machalel Shem Hashem, Shem HaKodesh of Hashem, which is proper to them. And we've discussed different ways in which that is possible in the previous chapters. This chapter leads us all the way to, I think, almost the completion of this series of laws, which are all framed around Kedusha. Possibly the next chapter after that is also a continuation, and the one after that, we'll get to them as we get to them this week. But we have to read firstly what this chapter, in some sense, but I'm saying that this is getting to the end because it seems like there's some miscellaneous subjects in this chapter. Sometimes, as we see often, we've seen this in Parshas Kedoshim also, and in many other parshias, that as the parshias reach their end, so there's like a subject which just gets slowly exhausted, and then you get a bunch of short little things which sort of don't have they're replaced, they don't belong anywhere else, and this is where they get put in. So this is sort of how I understand this chapter. As we'll see, it gets to an ending, like a final, very elaborate ending, talking about how important it is to keep the sanctity, the Kedusha of Hashem, of the Kehanim, of the people in these specific ways, and warning from the Chil Hashem. So the first parsha in this chapter starts with a long warning. A whole pasuk, which is just a warning, just a framing of the subject, says, telling Moshe, and this is another thing, how I see that this is a beginning of a new part in this series, because the previous chapter finished with Moshe. You can see here, with Moshe speaking to Aaron and his children and all the people and telling them apparently everything until then, or maybe everything in that specific chapter, which started Dabar l'Aaron, but maybe all the way back to, not sure how far back we can go because it talks about Bnei Yisrael. What did he tell them? We want to go back all the way to the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim because I think that since then there isn't a report of Moshe speaking everything to the Bnei Yisrael. And as we've discussed already in the beginning of Vayikra, although all of this is laws, there's still a story, a narrative of Moshe teaching the laws to the people and how it was received by him and how he gives it over to them. So it's possible that that's all goes back all the way to then. Not sure entirely and for sure until where it goes down, but for sure there's a new beginning. So until now was laws that are relevant to all the people. Now we're talking about laws of Kedusha specifically, which are relevant only to Aaron and his children. And therefore there's this specific framing, just like Kedoshim Tiyu started with Kedoshim Tiyu Ani Hashem. There's a beginning, it says, V'yinozru mekodesha v'nei esrov lo yichali Hashem kodesha ashrem ekdishim li Ani Hashem. What this is trying to say is that the Kehanim should be careful with the Kodeshim, the things, the Karbonas, that the people are being makdish to Hashem and not to be mechal of them. I think that the Pusik was arranged in a specific way so it should finish Asherhem Magdishim Li, although really Asherhem Magdishim Li, as you can see here, belongs to Kodeshim Vnei Yisrael. But it didn't want to finish Vlei Chali Hashem Kodeshim, it wanted to finish Magdishim Li Ani Hashem in a similar way to like Kedoshim Tiyu Ki Ani Hashem, Ki Kodesh Ani Hashem. And now what is specifically? Specifically, what do we mean? Now is the second pasuk, which is again a full pasuk, like it begins and ends, starts Amor Elohim and finishes Ani Hashem. And this is the style of many of the Pesukim, the way they give in each sentence the full story. And each time it gets more elaborate, each time it gives you more details, what I mean to say. What I mean to say is that one of your children, any of your generations, which will go close, which will touch. Rashi says touching means eating, but in any case, the touching is the problem. The getting close to the Kodeshim when he is impure, when he is Tameh, he will receive the Einish of Kodesh. We've seen many times the Einish of Kodesh is specifically the Einish that you get for mixing boundaries, for not obeying the correct Kedusha of things. And now, we still don't know what this means. We still don't know what is Tumah, and what kind of Tumah, and how do you get pure from which Tumah. All of that, we don't yet know. And some of it we'll find out now. Some of it we've already found out. Some of it we still will not find out until Parshas Chukas, where it talks about Tumah Smeis, how you get pure from it, and other things. But we get some details of explaining what this V'tum'usei Olav mean, right? How is Tumah, and how sentence starts again. And this is the last time in this series where it starts. It says, any Ish Mzer Aharon, any person, any individual from the descendants of Aharon, who will be either Tzerua or Zav, or Metzora or Zav, we've discussed the Metzora or Zav earlier, in Parshas Tazria Metzora, he cannot eat from Kodeshim, and here we also know what Yikrav means, right? It says explicitly, Lo Yechal, until he is purified. Now the purification of Tzerua and Zav, obviously we already discussed in Parshas Tazria Metzora, it said how to become not anymore a Tzerua or a Zav. And now there's some more kinds of tumas which we did not learn then how to become pure from them, and we're learning now. And there's a list of four things. Someone who touches b'chol tamei nefesh, so he touches someone else that was tamei. Or if a shichva zera went out of him. Or if he touched a shered, which is metame. Or if he touched a person who is metame. Maybe that's the same thing as negei b'chol tamei nefesh, but tamei nefesh probably means tamei lemes, and odom hashiyat mele means someone who touched a different tamei. Now, if you did any of these things, then, here's the law. What happens is, you were tummy until the evening, so therefore you can't eat from the Kodeshim until the evening, but the evening is not enough, so it seems like there's two stages. We call this a tefillah, and we usually read it as if first he has to tovel, but the tefillah doesn't help until at night. Here it seems like it's really the opposite. First he has to wait until at night, and also he has to wash himself. So it's his tummy for one day, that's like the zman for the tummy, but besides for that, he needs to wash himself, which we should interpret as using a mikveh, but in any case, he has to wash himself, and then in the evening, when the sun sets, then he can eat min hakodeshim. And the Torah adds a reasoning, ki lachmahi, we can understand as saying, this is why there's this leniency, so really his tummy, so, and how does he get pure back so quickly, like just today, just being toivel? The answer is, this is really his food, as we've discussed, that we've seen, I think, already, Lechem Alechu Makriv. And besides for Lechem Alechu Makriv, it's also the, and we'll see in the next part about Ruma, more clearly, the Kohen's food is the Lechem. He doesn't have any other food. This is what he eats. So if he will not be allowed to eat at all, he will sort of go hungry. So, and it somehow, it seems like the logic of Tvil Yom is that the Kohen should have something to eat at least every night. So maybe during the day. So if you go for a day without having a lot of food, that's not too bad. But at least at night, he'll be able to eat. So even if he became impure in the morning, Shechva Zera is usually the night before, and so on, during the day, he got impure. So right before the Shkia, he goes to the mikveh, and therefore, he can eat his supper at night when he comes home, and that is his food. So that's the literal, the halacha that says here. Now there's one more kind of tumah which it talks about. Of course, there's a problem to explain what is going on here. And it says that nevelo treifa, he should not eat either and he'll become tumah. Of course, we know it earlier that a yid is also not allowed to eat nevelo treifa, but we understand that this is relating to the tumah. So again, there seems like there's a tumah also in the same tvilyum, we would assume, would go on nevelo treifa. And therefore, that's also part, but it's not part of the previous category, so it's here separately. But we still need to, there's still a problem with this pasuk. And here we have a ending for this whole part. V'shamru v'nishmarti, they should keep my watch, right? Watch my watch again, because the kehanim, we've seen this sometimes, the kehanim's job is to keep the watch of the kodesh, of the holy things, and this, specifically the ones that eat in our makdish, and part of that is not touching them or not eating them while they are impure. But the Yisrael of Chet, they should not carry their sin, which is like their shlichas from the Yidden, to take care of the kachim correctly, and if they will, they will be chayav misa. So earlier we had kodesh, then we have misa, and it signs off with Hashem, ani Hashem mekadosham. Now, another part of this chapter, another parsha, and it starts us off to another subject. What's this new subject? We now discussed that even a kohen when he is impure is not allowed to eat kodeshim. But kal v'chomer really, or additionally, someone who's not a kohen for sure cannot eat kodeshim. And here we have a parsha we could see is framed by this statement: v'chol zol le'achol kodesh, or v'chol zol le'achol bay. A zor, meaning someone who is not a kohen, cannot eat kodesh. That's step one. But now things are slightly more complicated. As we've learned, the food of the kohen is kodesh. Now, if the food of the kohen is kodesh, that means also the food of his household is kodesh. So, because that's his food. Like the kohen doesn't have his own fields, he doesn't have his own property. So, eating to him means eating kodesh. So now, just like we saw, there's some leniency of tvil yom, which helps that. What's also with the people that belong to the kohen, that belong to the kohen's household, but they're not really kihanim, and that includes many different categories. Number one, it includes toishav kohen v'socher, his toishav, so someone who works for him. Or maybe he's a goy or a yid, doesn't matter, some kind of slave or some kind of level of servant. What is his law? So the law for him is that he can't eat kodesh. So the goy, if he has enough money to hire someone, he'll have to find money to buy food besides for that. But if he buys someone, if he's his full slave, it doesn't say here if he's a Yiddish slave or a goyish slave, we'll have to refer to the laws of slaves to find out if you can buy a Yiddish slave. But if he's a full slave, then he can't eat. And the same thing he did based to someone who bought the mother of the slave. So already the slave was born, it's considered even more part of your household. We'll see this many times in the laws of slaves. Slaves in ancient times were considered part of the household, but there's two levels of slaves. There's a slave that you bought, and there's a slave that was born in your house, which is even more part of your household. It might have literally been born out of the master, as we've learned in Parshas Mishpatim, Lecha Avyed. Or he might have been given him as a slave to marry her, which was again considered as part of his household, like it's almost like his daughter-in-law, then for sure. But in any case, Eved of a kohen can eat. Now there's another kind of person who is not entirely a kohen himself. So the son of a kohen isn't a kohen himself, not a problem. What about the daughter of a kohen? Daughter of a kohen is not a kohen herself, but because she's not doing the avodah, right? A kohen is someone who is lechem alecha umakrev. Their daughters don't do any avodah, so they're not really kehanim. But also, we assume, the pasuk assumes already that we understand that she can eat, and then discusses some specific cases of this bas kohen. The kohen's daughter, sometimes she marries a zar, she marries someone who's not a kohen. So now, she loses her kohen, so to speak. It's not really that she loses it. She only ate the kodeshim because she was her belong to her father's household. Now when she leaves to her husband's household, she can't eat anymore to the Masa Kodeshim. There's one exception to this rule, sort of. In other words, there's one way for her to get back. If she, now, which is really the way of how to get back to her parents' household. If she gets married, and then even if her husband dies, or she gets divorced, but she has children, so she's still part of her father's household, of her husband's household, right? We learned in different halachas, we see how a woman, in some sense, can remain part of her husband's household, even though he died or divorced her, then she doesn't get back to her father's house. But if she is an almuna or a grusha, her husband died or divorced her, and she has no children, so there's nothing tying her to her husband's household, then she can return to her father's household and she eats from her father's food. So that's the halacha of a zar, and the specific kind of zars do belong to the kohen's household, that they can eat also kodeshim or terumim. Now, we have the halacha of someone who is not a kohen and ate kodesh b'shoigik. So, b'mezid, I'm not sure we've already said. But b'shoigik, maybe it says here, b'shoigik, there's a specific law that if you eat kodesh b'shoigik, you will have to repay it plus one-fifth, plus 20%. And here we have another pasuk, which is just a summary and a nice ending, saying that they should not be mechalal, and if they will, which seems to mean that the kehanim are responsible for making sure that no zar eats kodesh, and kind of responsible for keeping this in the kedusha and so on. So those are the laws, and I think this sort of ends this part. Maybe really we should have one level of ending at this part. This ends this part of the shmirah of the kedushas hakodeshim, right? The kedushas hakodeshim that a kohen cannot eat when he's tuma, and a zar cannot eat it, and specific laws of a zar, and what happens if a zar does eat it. So that ends that subject. Now, we have another series of laws. I should maybe add a new header like this here, which is really not addressed to the kohen specifically, but specifically addressed back to the Bnei Yisrael, and this is a question where this little part belongs. It starts, Dabal Hanav El Bona Ve'el Kol Bnei Yisrael, right? as opposed to before, which was Ahanav El Bonav. So this was, it's Ahanav El Bonav, because as we see, the Kehanim, their job is to take care of all these things. But it's also to all the B'nai Yisrael. And here there's a new halacha, which is that a carbon should not have a mum, and there's a list of mum. So we already know many times, since the beginning of Vayikra, the word tumim is one of the words that appears the most times. I didn't count, but the most popular word is Vayikra is tumim. It says in every carbon specifically that it should be tumim, which means not having a mum. Okay. But this is the parsha which gives us what the mumen are. That's probably the point of this parsha. It's analogous to the parsha that we had earlier, which talks about the mumen of the kehanim, which is probably why it's what it's doing here. A little earlier we had in parshas, right, in the previous chapter, Brechov Aleph, we discussed the mumen of the kehanim, and there's a list of what koyin is about mum. And now we have the list of the mumen of the karbonas. So first we have a list of all kinds of karbonas. Well, first all kinds of people. This is very detailed kind of law, both in Beis Yisrael, Menaged, no matter if he's a Jew or not, or a Ged. He has to do a tumim, no matter which kind of karbon, baka, kvosim, uzim, cannot be have a baal mum. It's not l'rotzen, Hashem will not be happy with it, so to speak. And the same thing with the zevach shlomim, which is, as we've discussed many times, there's a oila, which is one kind of karbon, and a shlomim, which is another kind of karbon. These are include all the rest of the karbonas. Again, cannot be a baal mum. It's the same kind of, we see the same kind of ending here and here. And what we got here is the list of women. I'm not going to go through the list because I don't know particularly each one what it is. But there's a long list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. One list and then another list, maybe specifically for a shoyr v'seh, surah v'kolet. And it says, nedovatas oisel nedelei rutza, which has to be unexplained if that's the halacha or what does that mean. There's then another list, moch v'chosos v'nusik v'chores also, which cannot be carbon. And in this list, there's something particular. So apparently, the first list seems to be a general list of mumen, of problems with the body of the carbon. Second list seems to be something that's slightly less of a mum. It says nedova ta'asoysoy. We don't interpret the halacha. That means literally that you can make it nedova if it's voluntary, but not if it's obligatory, if it's a neder. But in any case, there's something less of a mum. We can understand that that's less of a mum. It's some kind of abnormality, but not like something broken. And now there's something which is something that is a different kind of category. Moch v'chosas v'nusk v'chores are a category. They're obviously a mum, but they're actually something that people do on purpose. So these are all mumen in the reproductive organs of the animal. And these are things that are sometimes specifically done. And therefore we have a lav here of artzchem loisas. It should not be done. So besides for Hashem, for a carbon doesn't like a carbon by mum, we understand the logic in that. There's also some kind of logic. And this has to be understood because obviously there's a practical reason why people do that to their animals. They're not just trying to destroy their livestock, right? They want, there's a good reason for this. But in any case, and nowadays when people have this reality, there's always like, it's just you sell it to a guy or something. It seems like we have to explain why there's this issue. You should not do it. So sometimes people do it, and this is a practice is outlawed. The Torah does not want people to make even their animals not being able. This is very anti-birth control, right? Halacha. Okay, yeah, at least for animals. And then there's another halacha we discussed again. It seems like, again, maybe this is specifically for this halacha, and that's why we have this, like we discussed, maybe again, the Ben Echa does do this practices, and there's not a problem, this is specific for Ba'artzachem. In any case, even if Ben Echa comes and brings a carbon, we should not accept it if it has one of these mumen. And this also teaches us that Ben Echa sometimes come and bring a carbon. A ger is not a Ben Echa, right? A ger is someone who's already living with you. Whether we understand that he's halachically a ger and is very mekayim the mitzvahs, because then it's the same thing. Or if he's a ger toshav, however you understand, a benecher, someone who's not a ger, someone, a goy from somewhere else, comes. Still, we enforce his halachas of balimum, because that's a question of honor for the mizbech. We cannot give a mizbech that is a balimum. So that's the end of the halachas of a mum. Now we have the last part of this chapter, and also the last part of this entire long series, before we get into the very long and specific parasha of the Yom Tovim, is three halachas of karbonas, three interesting halachas. And at least two of them belong to karbonas. The third one, the middle one, is also about karbonas, but also not only about karbonas, but probably belongs here because it's relevant when you do karbonas. The first halacha is that we only allow to bring a karbon from the eighth day. And this is probably also because the baby, when he's born, is really ugly and messy, and we waited for it like to be a real thing. Okay? Second halacha is not to shecht oisiv as benoi, shoyr v'seh. It's specifically shoyr v'seh before it's shoyr eches v'yez. This one is only shoyr v'seh. not slaughter him and his son, and it's interpreted in halacha as specifically not being him as a son, but her and her daughter and her son. But in any case, we can understand this as a question of atar balechaim, like not being nice to like do a genocide in the animal. Like one animal is one thing, but to kill like the whole shoyrish v'anaf, as the Ramban says, like the mother and the child, that's very bad. But maybe also has to do with the previous chapter. Like there seems to be, we don't want to like, for some reason, and we can understand it as connected to the question of Baal Mum, like we want to have an individuated animal to give to Hashem. We don't want like, oh, it's a baby, so let's just bring it along with his mother. Maybe that's connected with the Oysev Espinoy. Like we want it to be, have some level of being a being an animal in itself. And then, and now in the third halacha is, that is Zevach Toida, and we already started, had this once, I think, so maybe there's a question why it's here again. That is Zevach Toida shouldn't be eaten that day. We had already explicitly in Parshas Tzav a difference in this kind of shlomim and a regular shlomim and a toida. In any case, can eat in that day, not be left over to the morning. This, as we discussed this, so we should have a big party for the carbon toida. Shouldn't be leftovers. And when it's left over, it gets ruined, as it says in a different place, Pigalhu. So this also might be connected here to the concept of the beauty, like the niceness, the aesthetics of the carbonas. Maybe that's why it's doing here. There's also a proposal that this is all preparatory for the next chapter, which is about the Yemim Tovim, which is when you bring carbonas, and maybe then people will be tempted to do one of these three things. So it's repeated here. We'll maybe know that if we read it in that context. And that's the end of this series. And we have these three psukim, which are just a recap of the idea, right? This seems to be very important for the Torah here, which is why I'm talking about it, not only to list the rule, but also to understand sort of the meaning or the message in which they're encased, in which they're framed. Shmarta mitzvois, levelis chalis, shem kodshi, ani Hashem, and who is this Hashem, and mitzvies chamer, mitzvayim, lehem lehem, lehem lehem, ani Hashem.